you can always shift and change. And what really matters is if it fulfills you. If it doesn't fulfill you, change. Look for other opportunities.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Work in Progress Podcast with Dana and Angela. Today, we're excited to introduce our guest, Masha, also known as the Coding Blonde. You may know her already from her website, YouTube videos, and other social media platforms. She has a very good message about finding voice for diversity in tech. Not just women, but all kinds of women. And we are very lucky to have her share her career journey with us. So, without further ado, please welcome Masha. Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. And today is a very exciting episode because we have Masha, also known as the Coding Blonde, on our show today. And we have many, many questions for her because I know that she's been through many different transitions. We're super excited to have her on today to share with us her career journey, as well as the message that she's trying to spread, breaking the stereotype. So I'm super excited to have her on today. And so before we begin and jump right into the career transitions, Masha, do you mind giving us a little bit of introduction on what you're currently doing and what you did in the past?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me here. It's an honor. And I am very excited to talk to you guys. Getting into my background, I have a background in marketing, and I started working in the tech field by accident, and I will get into all the transitions later. Long story short, I ended up running my own company, my blog, and spreading the word about women in the tech area and really trying to empower them by showing that there are women who look like you. You know what I mean? Everybody will find a role model for themselves that look like them. And I'm really trying to showcase that and really spread the word that women are amazing and we really need diversity in technology. And this is how we can get there.
That's awesome. I love your message. So you mentioned that you started in marketing, and I saw that you had quite a few jobs before you started your own blog and got into tech. So can you tell us a little bit about the marketing part of your journey?
Yes, absolutely. So I have a master's degree in market research and consumer behavior. And once I graduated from that, I was finding it pretty difficult to find a job because I am originally Russian and I needed visa sponsored anywhere I wanted to work. I didn't want to go back to Russia. I got my master's in Spain, and I, to be honest, wanted to stay in Europe because I already had spent 10 years of my life living in Europe, so it just felt more natural there. So it was very difficult to find a job that would sponsor me for a visa. So I kind of ended up defaulting into some startups where I worked on an internship visa. Then I worked remotely. And those were tech startups because those were the places that allowed me to do to work in marketing, but doing it remotely, right? Those were the companies that were already kind of adjusted for that lifestyle. And I worked there for about a year. There were three startups that I worked with during that period of time due to visa considerations and things. And then I was thinking of how can I differentiate myself? How can I market my resume, essentially, as a recent marketing graduate? And become more employable and more eligible for visa sponsorship.
I gotta say, this visa thing really makes it difficult for many, many people who want to, pursue a career they want, or, you know, just, I guess, go work in a different country than, you know, the one that they were born into. So I really, I feel your pain. My husband kind of went through that part of of his career too, where he wanted to start his own company, but then due to visa reasons, so it was kind of difficult for him for a few years, actually. So I feel your pain.
Yeah, it's not fun, but, you know, it makes you stronger. It makes you find ways to stand out so much more. So back then was exactly the moment where I was like, oh, I remember as a child having coded in Visual Basic. I was 11 when I was very passionate about Visual Basic for some reason. My tea teacher loved me and gave me extra work, and I was nerding out over it, which, you know, I forgot all about it when I went to Europe to study in high school. And, you know, at that time, my focus was learning English and really making friends and being social, you know, in this new environment. But I remember, like, I decided to revisit that passion, and I realized that those skills, coding skills, would make me stand out as a candidate. So I started learning how to code, and that is actually when I started my blog, because my blog is called Coding Blonde because of a number of things. First of all, it really describes me at the time. I was a blonde learning how to code. Secondly, I come from a country where stereotypes, gender stereotypes, and especially stereotypes on blondes were very strong, right? I grew up, you know, listening to countless blonde jokes. And so I wanted to make the name of my blog kind of slightly not provocative, but yes, I wanted it to be a play on words, describe me, and send a message out. So that's when I started learning. That's when I started my blog. And 2 weeks later, I actually got a job at Google. I got my first interview with Google, which was my dream job at the time, dream company at a time. And it was also in the marketing field. So don't get me wrong. I was not hired for my newly acquired coding skills at that time. It continued to be marketing and content creation. I was working with YouTube creators in particular. So that was an interesting transition from recent grad into somebody who's working at Google with a side hustle, which is a blog.
How did you teach yourself to code? Like, were you using free resources online?
Yes, mostly I was using resources like Codecademy, which has a free version. Back in the day, it only had a free version. I don't remember it having a pro feature like it does now. And also I found a couple of boot camps. There was the W3 schools. I was just, you know, learning how to code is also learning how to Google things. So I was basically doing that and finding different resources and what resource would, because we understand things in different ways, we consume information in different ways, and one resource would do a better job for one person, another resource would do a better job for another person because of the way we understand concepts. And so I was just looking for those resources that would explain things to me in the language that I could digest.
I had a little question about when you got started. So was that in early 2010? Like, was it 2011 or something?
I started my blog in 2015, actually.
15. Okay, okay.
Because I graduated from a master's in 2014. Okay. And that kind of started off my startup cycle.
I see. Okay, okay. And that actually wasn't that long ago.
Nope, it wasn't that long ago, but I feel like I've transformed through so many different industries and environments. It's been a pretty crazy ride.
Mm-hmm. Would you say your coding, or like the fact that you were learning to code, kind of helped you got the job at Google as well? Or did you at any point bring that up as something that you wanted to talk about at the interview to kind of differentiate yourself from others?
Oh, absolutely. I remember talking, because it was my dream to work at that company, and you know, I loved it so much. I was doing a lot of reading and a lot of networking with Googlers, ex-Googlers, to see how they interview, to see what they value as a company. And taking initiative was one of the things, right? Learning about the world and, of course, learning how to code is another thing that that company values because, I mean, it is built on code, right? So yeah. I was really trying to mention it at any point I could in the interviews. I remember specifically looking for opportunities to mention it. And I actually wrote a blog post about how I think that starting my blog and learning how to code really has, it didn't necessarily help me get the job because I was qualified for the job, right? I knew my stuff. I fit the company culture, but it was the fact that it showed that I take initiative, that I was entrepreneurial and all that stuff, that I could finish a project, you know, all these things that it, that something like this signals to a potential employer. It did have that. And I made sure that I definitely mentioned that at any opportunity that I had during the interviews.
That was at the beginning of you learning to code. So what was the, what did you use to build your blog on?
I used WordPress and still am using WordPress. I decided that it would be easier because as a person who struggles with perfectionism, I understood that it would otherwise take me too long to build something that would I would be happy with. And it would be a major barrier for my growth, for my blog's growth, for my professional growth. So I decided to not to reinvent the wheel, not to build something of my own, but to start creating content on a platform that already exists, that has already been proven to be successful. And I, to be honest, one of the startups that I worked with was an e-commerce startup using WordPress, so I was really familiar with that platform, and it just made sense.
So you got into Google doing marketing, and that was for about 2 years, was it right?
Yes, correct. Yes, okay. Almost exactly 2 years.
And you were in marketing the whole time?
Yes, I was. Well, I'm calling it marketing because it was to do with content. It was, I guess, business development slash education slash community. There was so many different aspects involved. It wasn't the marketing department. It was, I was working with YouTube creators and teaching them, educating them about strategies on how they can grow their channels. So I was helping them with their content strategy and business growth strategy, while helping, obviously, Google and YouTube grow, you know, grow the pie essentially for everyone. And I was doing it with, there were so many different strategies that I, my team was employing. One of them was an online community. Then we had offline events. It was a crazy roller coaster, so many learnings. Just an amazing time, and the people there were just phenomenal. That's the biggest thing I miss about that place. Not free avocados or free coffee, but the people that I worked with.
So at that time, you were still doing, you know, like it was your dream job. You were still in marketing. It was kind of all like pretty, I guess, linear in terms of your trajectory, like in terms of, I guess, the direction of your career. But then later you quit that job and then you moved to Boulder. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was kind of a pivoting moment in my career. I was, so there's a personal aspect to that because I'm a huge believer in the fact that you have to balance things out, right? And I am very much career oriented, but if I, you know, if you have to take into account your personal life as well, and whether it's where you want to live or who you want to live with or, you know, how you want to live, all those things, they really matter. And I was in a long distance relationship with my boyfriend. we were doing London to Denver for over 3 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was very difficult. So it was time, and I realized that, you know, 2 years is a very good, solid chunk of time to work at one position, and then you should probably move on, whether within the company or externally, right? So I understood that my growth in terms of professional development and personal development that was stimulated by the job that I was doing was starting to decline, and I really wanted to relocate to the other side of the pond, right? I wanted to move to Colorado. So I was looking for opportunities internally and externally. And my manager at Google, he was wonderful. He helped me with that, and he was super supportive. It was, you know, it was a process, because as someone who needs a work visa in the US, it's difficult whether within Google or externally. So I was I had to have that consideration yet again. And it's always been a thing in my life. But hey, like I said, it makes you stronger, makes you think about different other different avenues of how you can stand out and prove yourself as a candidate. But I was, I couldn't find an opportunity internally that was at that office that would be exciting for my career growth, because obviously I didn't want to just move. I wanted to move and have something to look forward to in terms of profession. And so I couldn't find anything internally, because the positions that I was eligible for in terms of visa would have required me to be 150% qualified for the role. This means that there's no stretching, there's no growing. Maybe I, you know, go to a different product and learn about the different product, and then there's growth opportunities. But nothing excited me. So one day I got this email forwarded to me, and there's a funny story attached to it. I was on my way to my best friend's bachelorette party at Coachella. And I was taking off from Denver to LA, and I got that email just on, like, right before the plane took off. And it was for this position called Global Entrepreneur in Residence at CU Boulder, part-time, pretty vague description, but, you know, looked interesting, and why not? But the submission, the deadline for the application submission was the next day.
Oh my God.
And I was like, all right, so maybe I'll try to do it from the airport before my friend arrives. Of course, my plane was delayed, and I couldn't submit it. But you know what? I committed, and the next morning, as my friends were getting ready to go to Coachella, I was in the hotel lobby writing a business plan to submit for this opportunity. And you know what? It ended up working out.
It worked out.
Exactly. I always want to have my options open, and if something looks good, apply. Why not? You can always say no if something better shows up, or if you feel like this is not the right path. But I applied, and it was the right path, and I'm super grateful for that opportunity. I worked at CU Boulder for about a year and a half, and it was a very interesting contrast to Google, of course, because it was a university, right? Now I've experienced a third type of organization. So started with startups and a big corporation like Google, and then a university, which took some adjustment, to be honest. Never really interacted with academics other than submitting my dissertation or something. But it was a very much, I don't know, on the surface kind of interaction, but now I was in it. And the role also wasn't very structured. There weren't clear definitions of the role. It was also part-time. And so I kind of had to define it for myself and figure out how I can apply my skill set to benefit the university. Because the description was basically I had to be involved and support innovation and entrepreneurship and activities on campus. Mm. Like, where do you even begin? You know?
Yeah.
It's very open-ended.
Yeah.
Very open-ended. And also, you know, I had to participate in some way. In some big events, for example, we had some pitching competitions and things like that. I had to support those. Those were a must. But then where do I find myself the rest of the year? So I had to orient myself on the campus, learn about what is going on, meet the stakeholders, figure out whether I can help them or not, and then, you know, kind of define it for myself. So it was very interesting. But it also gave me an opportunity to, well, first of all, define my role, but secondly, work on my blog mm-hmm. for the other part of the time that I was working there and build up my blog to where it is now. And now I'm an entrepreneur just full-time on my blog. And that's another, I guess, experience in terms of organizational structure, much more nerve-wracking than anything else, but mm-hmm. it's fun.
That is so cool. I guess I have a question about how, you know, you mentioned your blog a few times, but we all know that you're, you know, on different social media platforms. You know, I've watched a lot of your YouTube videos, you're on Instagram, and you obviously have your blog. What made you kind of decide that your blog is your main bread and butter, or is it not? Or is it actually YouTube your main focus, or did that focus ever shift it kind of throughout the years?
I call it my blog wherever I go. I feel like I'm creating content for a specific audience, and you know, those different social media outlets are just channels of distribution. Mm-hmm. That's how I see it. So I see it as kind of an umbrella term for all of that content that I'm putting out.
Got it.
It might be a little bit confusing because blog is seen as a blog, but a lot of the times my blog is a landing page where you can find all of my other content, essentially. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I see it. When did I decide that I wanted to be my bread and butter? So I think that, well, first of all, it was it was an organic decision when mm-hmm. I was taking up that part-time role to see it through, because why was I spending all of my free time editing YouTube videos if it wasn't going to turn into anything else, right? And I was mm-hmm. passionate about serving that audience. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to see it through. And to be honest, I'm still seeing it through. I don't know whether I'll be running this full time in 5 years' time. Who mm-hmm. knows? But mm-hmm. at the moment, it's working. It's bringing me fulfillment mm-hmm. and it's making me grow in different ways mm-hmm. That I would have probably not experienced in any other avenue, because there's just so many learnings when you're creating your own business and are experimenting and all that good stuff. So for now, it's my thing. I don't know whether it's going to evolve into something else. Mm-hmm. We will see. But I didn't really have a turning point when mm-hmm. I decided, okay, this is going to be my, I guess when I was leaving CU Boulder and I decided to take it full time, but it was kind of a natural transition. Mm-hmm. It was never a decision like, okay, this is it. I'm going to do this. It was kind of defaulting into it because it brings me so much, it excites me so much because there's so much to do. Mm-hmm. And it makes me learn on my feet all the time.
Mm. I see. So I have a question going back a little bit to the CU Boulder position that you had. You said that it was the role definition wasn't very clear when you started. So you had to define it for yourself. And how was that process like? How did you define your role? And, you know, what was the whole process like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think I ended up defining it as specifically as one would, because I just defined me and my partner and the other global entrepreneur in residence, there were two of us at a time in that cohort. We just, I guess, we got together and we were told to create goals for ourselves, because at the end of the day, right, every goal, every role has to achieve something. Otherwise, what are you doing? Right. So our boss told us to come up with some goals, and I guess we did. And we had different goals. Him and I, we had a different skill set. And so we had different goals based on how we can serve the campus. But it wasn't until we knew the landscape of the campus that we could do that, because we couldn't, otherwise we couldn't understand where we could have impact. So I guess it, the first stage was really familiarizing ourselves with the campus, with what's going on, with the different events, really talking to people and seeing how we can help, and then defining, okay, so I can help this initiative. For example, there was this wonderful initiative. I don't remember the acronym that they used, but it was bringing people from public institutions in Denver into this incubator, essentially, and teaching them leadership skills and entrepreneurship skills. So that lean entrepreneurial model, so that they have the basics, and then they would divide them into groups to mix people from different organizations together, and they would give them problems. And those people should had to come up with solutions for those problems. And it was, you know, the whole brainstorming and all that stuff was on site on the campus. And we helped them with some workshops and mentoring when it comes to their pitches and everything, because they ended up pitching their solutions to essentially the government, the Denver government, because the governor was there, and the heads of their organization. Very interesting stuff. So once we learned about things like this, we understood where we could help them, how we could help them, and therefore kind of create goals for ourselves, and that defined the roles going forward.
Okay. And were these things you've done in the past, or you knew how to do before, or it was also like a learning curve for you?
Oh, 100%. I, to be honest, I was very excited and also very nervous about starting that job, because my experience with entrepreneurship was pretty limited at that time. I have worked at startups and I've seen them pitch, and I've helped with some pitch decks, but it was very, very basic. And, you know, it was a limited experience. And then my friend and I started an Indiegogo campaign with feminist t-shirts. That was another experience. But again, it was very limited because I was traveling nonstop for work and also for my own pleasure at the time. It was just a very busy season when we decided to do it. And so it wasn't as hands-on as I would like for, you know, the learnings that I could have extracted from it. And that was basically it. Yes, I was running Coding Blonde, my blog, but it wasn't making money at the time. So I wasn't familiar with that aspect of, you know, what I was running as well. So I had to learn a lot about entrepreneurship and everything. So it was a wonderful experience for me, because I just learned so much on the job as I was doing it. It was wonderful.
And was it in terms of the learning you did, was it kind of guided from your mentor or your boss, or it was just you reading things online and talking to people that knew how to do it?
I would say the second. We had some structural changes while I was there, so I didn't really have access to my boss as much as, you know, I would want, because she was overstretched. She had so many employees under her, and I didn't really get a lot of time with her. And I understood that, you know, this is our program was the Global Entrepreneur in Residence program was one of the initiatives, and it was kind of independent by nature. So I realized that I would do it by myself. And I, to be honest, I was just attending as many events as I could in the on campus and everything, because there were resources right there in front of me. And I was just going along with it and learning as much as I could, you know, trying to, as a sponge.
It's okay. I
think it's a Russian phrase in my head right now.
And cool.
I'm trying to translate it literally, but I'm not going to be able to.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. I think I get what you're trying to say. That's awesome. Yeah. And then so you learn it and then you try to bring it back to the program. You try to teach people, and that's
I wasn't
great.
Necessarily teaching the same stuff. I was teaching I was adding my angle, right? So my angle was teaching and content. So I was adding my angle to it, which, you know, obviously needed to know how I could help and like what is the content that everybody else is creating in order to add value. But yeah, I was adding value from my side.
I see. Would you say that what you learned in this role helped you with your blog?
For sure. For sure. It has definitely helped me, maybe not directly, maybe indirectly. But it just gave me a different perspective on things. And I feel like it has fueled my mission to a different extent. Because having worked in that entrepreneurial environment, I realized the power of innovation and entrepreneurship. And I think that, which, you know, obviously I knew it before, but I could see it firsthand. And I could see that things are just so possible. And I want to help women in technology really go for it. And I think that it just has added something to me that I was missing before. And I'm sure the next experiences will also do the same thing. But yeah, I'm very happy that I have had that experience because it made me who I am now.
So what do you think are some personalities or traits that you have that personally helped you navigate through all these changes, you know, through different jobs, different industries, different roles, and even different countries?
Well, I guess the first one is adaptability. And because I left Russia when I was 14 and I had to adapt to a boarding school in the UK and adapting to a new language, trying to make friends and then adapting to the next situation. So for me, I guess I really don't care where I am. I know I will adapt. I know I will find friends and allies. Also, I try to see an opportunity in everything that comes along. It doesn't happen immediately, of course. Sometimes when some news are delivered that are not necessarily positive, it can bring me down. But over time, I try to turn things around and I try to look at things as I can do this. It's not happening to me, but I can do this. And normally, I'm a pretty positive person.
That's wonderful.
So that helps. That helps for sure.
That's important.
And I'm all about creating community. One of my roles at Google, well, my role in Google, part of it was called community manager, and it was all about creating community, building community. And I try to do that everywhere I go, whether personally or professionally or virtually. I really am focused on community and on that human touch because people in technology, especially, it is easy to lose the sight of that while it's so important. That's what we can bring to the table.
Got it.
Wonderful. I love communities as well. I think I'm not sure if you're familiar with maybe some of the online communities in the Bay Area, which is actually where we are. And also we didn't really properly introduce ourselves to you. So you're probably like, I don't know where you are, like physically. But Dana and I are both physically located in the Bay Area. So we're really close to San Francisco. And there's a bunch of, you know, different, obviously the tech scene is really big here. And then also different communities specifically targeting women that are in tech. And one thing I noticed, well, at least for myself, is I feel like, you know, just through our conversation in the last 40 or so minutes, I feel like you just really just exude confidence and, you know, you're really passionate about what you do. And I love that. But I also noticed that you have a YouTube video on imposter syndrome, and you actually think that it's actually a good thing. And while, you know, like a lot of the times when it's mentioned, it's always like, oh, you know, like, you know, we want to make sure people are aware that a lot of people deal with it, not just men, not just women, not just people that are new to any particular industry. It's just such a widespread syndrome that we see in so many people. But would you share with us, you know, our listeners and tell us why you think it's actually good?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a topic that I love talking about. It's, and I can imagine people in the Bay Area in particular, feel it almost daily, because I experience it, because that's where most of the big tech companies are. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is a huge, there's a huge statistic around how many people in those big tech companies feel that imposter syndrome. I know for Google, for example, that was, I don't remember the exact number, but it was somewhere around 90 something percent, yeah. Which is crazy, right? Like how can the majority of the organization feel like imposters? They're clearly there for a reason. Mm-hmm. However, it's just such a normal thing, because we are, and I try to position this as something that's not necessarily positive. We used to be proud of being perfectionist. Mm-hmm. I think that perfectionism is not necessarily conducive to a lot of innovation or movement. So, and you know, I'm not going to go into details about that, but we are, a lot of us are perfectionists. Mm-hmm. And I have read that imposter syndrome has been linked with that. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you are so worried to be perceived anything less than perfect, mm-hmm. by your peers, by anybody else, by yourself at the end of the day, right? And so mm-hmm. you start feeling as if you are not in the right place, because some of the things you just don't know some of the things. Like I remember when I first joined Google and I went into a meeting, and for the first 2 or 3 months, I didn't understand a lot of what was going on, just because mm-hmm. I didn't know the acronyms. I didn't know the special terminology. They called spreadsheets tricks. For the first 2 or 3 days, I did not understand what they were referring to. I was go into that tricks. And I was thinking, what is that? And it's just a Google spreadsheet, right?
Oh my gosh.
A Google sheet. And, you know, things like that, they obviously weigh us down. We're like, I don't know things. People are smarter than me. And so this doubt, the self-doubt starts creeping in. Mm-hmm. However, I think that I really truly believe that when you feel like an imposter, it means that you are in an environment where you don't feel comfortable. You don't have your, you know, like home slippers mm-hmm. where that absolutely match the outline of your feet. You are wearing new shoes that are kind of rough around the edges, and you have to get used to them. You are in this, you're outside of your comfort zone. And which means that whether it is, it doesn't have to be a specific skill that you're growing, but you are growing. You are mm-hmm. getting used to a different environment. You're adapting to a new environment. You're starting to learn how to feel confident. You're learning something, whether you're learning how to call Google spreadsheets, mm-hmm. that they're called tricks, or whether you're learning how to do a presentation in front of your peers or in front of your superiors, you are learning. And so mm-hmm. I think that it is a very positive sign, and we should change our perspective on it mm-hmm. from a victim to a person who is in control, a person who is actually putting themselves up for a challenge so that you feel like you are pushing yourself instead of, you know, your environment pushing on you. Once we switch our perception of it from a victim to being in control, things change, because then you feel like it's up to you. It's not up to your environment. You regain the control of the feeling and you start feeling much better about it, much more confident. And it just makes your life better in general. And I think that, you know, it's a very good idea to do that, along with some obviously exercises when it comes to, I don't know, you can do them during your morning routine, evening routine, involving journaling, gratitude, and really listing things that you're proud of yourself for, listing things that you're learning and all that stuff. So kind of create a solid foundation for that experience. Because it can be a scary thing, but you don't have to be the victim there. In fact, you shouldn't be a victim. That's a passive approach. That's an approach where your environment dictates how you work. Well, you should get out of there and get into the driver's seat and drive your career instead of it being the driver. So yeah, those are my thoughts on that. I wonder if you, what you think about that?
Oh my God. I think, first of all, I love how you put it. I love that you said, you know, it's really just a mindset shift that you need to remind yourself. And I think a lot of the times I feel like an imposter if I'm in a place where like I feel like everyone else knows more than me and I start to feel uncomfortable. And I think that's like a great reminder of everything that you just said, is to tell myself that I need to actually, first of all, command myself for putting myself in this situation, right? Because you never grow if you're not ever put under pressure or some kind of uncertainty. So like a little bit about myself is I am pretty new to also like the whole tech and coding scene. I did a boot camp earlier this year, so I'm kind of in the process of still like looking for a job to like truly break into it. And I feel like I'm kind of at that position also where I, you know, oftentimes have to deal with a lot of self-doubt. But yeah, it's really just like you said, you know, like if I can tell myself that it's okay to feel uncomfortable, it's okay to be nervous, but you're doing yourself a great thing by putting yourself in outside of your comfort zone. And that's really where you're going to grow. And I think with that mindset shift, you know, makes all of the other things that, you know, you need to continue to do a lot easier. So that's wonderful. I don't think I've ever heard anyone put this like imposter syndrome in this context and kind of like, you know, look at it this way. So I think that's wonderful that you're sharing this.
I think it's a very positive way to think about a problem that you're having, you know, like to not feel victimized by it and to feel that this is basically the growth mindset, to grow from a problem that you're having instead of feeling that like you're the victim of this situation. And I think that's a very positive attitude and I really appreciate that.
Regaining control over your life and recognizing the fact that you are pushing yourself to grow, it's just, I don't know, I feel like it creates a cycle where you just become much more satisfied with your life and with your growth, and you understand that it's you who's driving it. So it's very empowering.
I had a question about the community when you were talking about it at your role at Google and also with what you're doing currently. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I have this question because I'm more of an introvert. So there are a lot of opportunities for me to be involved in communities, but more often than not, I choose to just kind of sit out and just watch because I get nervous talking to people sometimes. But I think maybe it's time for me to change my perspective and get more involved. But I would like to hear your perspective on why you love to do it and how you create communities in places that you go.
Absolutely. And I'm also an introvert, so 100% understand what you're talking about. I had to learn it the hard way when I was working at Google. Part of my job was creating events, and sometimes there were and creating offline communities by creating events, because online communities are much more straightforward, right? You can turn off those notifications. You can have that time for yourself where you can kind of regain your strength and everything. Because us introverts, we do need our alone time. But mm-hmm. with offline things, it's harder. And so I got thrown into that. Didn't necessarily love all of the aspects that came with it because it was just overwhelming. But I've learned that for me, what I really value is bringing people together and creating mm-hmm. topics that they can talk about so that mm-hmm. I can kind of, when I need to, I can step out of the conversation mm-hmm. and I can be that viewer, just like what you're saying, right? I can be that witness mm-hmm. to what they're doing and kind of watch it. So obviously it really depends on the environment, right? But I can give you a couple of examples. Back when I was creating events, I would a lot of the times create exercises for them, mm-hmm. for people who attended, or I would, invite speakers or guests or someone who can share something to create a common topic. I would also, I'll move to this later, but in a personal example, I really love bringing my friends together and making them friends. It's a weird thing, but it makes me so happy when I bring friends from different parts of my life, like your high school friend, your university friend, your friend from your first job, mm-hmm. those kind of people that have been dispersed throughout your life, and then bring them together and having them become a community, essentially. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but it just makes me so happy. But I remember doing that not that long ago, and I was just finding common topics and starting them to kind of bring those topics to the table mm-hmm. and seeing how that conversation would develop. I didn't have to participate all the time. Mm-hmm. I was just enjoying watching the conversation flow and really being a witness again with that. But I also have realized that when it comes to communities, one too many gets me very, communication when it comes to one too many drains me. I do enjoy it, but mm-hmm. it drains me just as a person when it comes to my energy. So I try to, whenever I can, have one-to-ones and deeper conversations with people in that regard, and really learning about them. I don't want to share as much about myself in those situations. I really love for them to do most of the talking because I really genuinely am interested in what they're doing. And also I understand that it also preserves some of my energy, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess that is my approach to doing that. I don't know if that answered your question though.
Oh, that did. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Great.
Thank you. And so my next question is, going back a little bit on your blog, how did you get started full time, and tell us a bit about what you're working on these days?
Yeah, for sure. So I started full time in February and mm-hmm. Mid-February this year. So mm-hmm. it hasn't been a year yet. And it's been pretty interesting because my boyfriend and I, we've been going through a transition of becoming digital nomads at the same time. So we're currently in Peru, going back to Denver actually next week for the holidays, but otherwise living that laptop lifestyle and really enjoying it. But yeah, it was just a lot of transitions in general. So I can't really speak about that transition in particular because it kind of has blended with everything else. But it has been an interesting evolution because all of a sudden I have all this time and mm-hmm. I just have so many ideas and there's only one of me. I do have a virtual assistant that helps me with some stuff, but mm-hmm. it's very hard to let go of control when you're a perfectionist, when you're suffering from perfectionism. So I am learning how to do that. And that is going to be a big part of, you know, my goals for 2020, learning how to really hire a team and learn how to let go of that control. But what am I working now? What I'm working on now, like literally these days, is an online course. Mm-hmm. It's going to go live on Monday, so December 16th. And it's called Define What Success Means to You. Mm. And it is essentially a way to create a framework for you on how you see success. And I have some theories about it, and it's basically a very practical course. It's just, there's just one module of theory and the rest is exercises. Mm-hmm. And I really hope to be able to send the message and really hope to give access to these tools to people so that they understand the value of defining your vision first and really understanding that your path is going to be different. It mm-hmm. doesn't have to be that predetermined, okay, so I'm a marketing person, right? And so I start my first marketing job and then I go to my next marketing job and then I only climb this marketing career ladder. Mm-hmm. No, your life, you create it, right? And you don't have to follow anyone's path. You don't have to you don't have to make anyone else happy mm-hmm. by sticking to a certain path. You can always shift and change, and what really matters is if it fulfills you. If it doesn't fulfill you, change, look for other opportunities, and really understanding that you can be okay with not satisfying your parents' expectations. For example, if your parents wanted you to be a lawyer, or if I don't know, my grandparents, one of my granddads really wants children right now for me. And I'm like, granddad, sorry, it doesn't enter my realm of what success means to me right now. Maybe mm-hmm. in 5 years it will. Yeah. But right now, this is not it. And for example, other things like society, I was born in Russia, right? And all of that stereotypes of Russian women always being perfect in terms of their hair, makeup, nails. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at my nails right now. I need to remove that nail polish. But you know what? It's not something that's so pressing on my mind, because I'm okay with that not being part of my definition of success. Mm-hmm. So it's just giving people a framework to look at what success is to them, mm-hmm. and giving them the permission to follow it and to share it with other people so that they understand that this is actually what makes me happy. It's not what you saw for me. I know it's very abstract right now that I'm describing it, but success is very abstract, right? Yeah. And the concept of success,
very
and
subjective.
That's what very subjective, and that's what I'm trying to do with my course, to kind of help people see it on paper so that they understand how to reach it, and they can communicate it much better to other people so that other people stop expecting other things from them and therefore putting pressure on them. So yeah, that's what I'm working on right this moment. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, I have some ideas for some projects involving community and everything, but I don't have a very concrete definition of those. So mm-hmm. I'm not able to share anything specifically because it hasn't formed in my head yet. I have to do more work.
Well, I think just listening to a description of the course, I think I'm going to sign up for it, because I feel like it's pretty similar to the why we're doing this podcast and our blog, really, is because we feel like, Angela is going through a career transition herself. And I also kind of reached that stage in my life where I'm thinking, maybe I should change if my career no longer, I don't know, maybe if I hit a ceiling, or maybe if I feel like my career no longer excites me, sort of. I feel like I've learned a lot, but now I want to learn something else. But I see a lot of people around me that have those feelings, but instead of actually changing, they feel stuck, especially if you have invested a lot in your previous career. Like, say you were a lawyer or you were a doctor or you were somebody for 10 years. And usually people just feel like they should keep going, or there are other people's expectations on what you should be, like you mentioned. So I think that that's a very relevant course for almost anyone, really. And I think I might sign up for it because I'm kind of going through a phase in my life where I'm thinking, an opportunity just kind of came up at work and I'm thinking about taking it, but maybe not without doing some of the homework myself first. I don't know if I want to take it because this is a new thing that I could change into, or do I really want to, you know, get into this different field? I think that would be very helpful for me.
I'm glad to hear that because I really wanted to create something that can help guide people making these kinds of decisions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing because I went through that transition myself. Mm. And I had to shift my perspective of success because I left Google, right? My dream company. And I was like, what am I doing with my life? And my friends and family were saying, what are you doing with your life? So I had to kind of reshift that. I had to learn how to communicate that so that people are not worried for me. Let's just say that. and I've created my own methodology on how other people can also do the same. So yeah, I hope you find it useful.
I know I definitely will. So next I have kind of a little fun thought exercise that I like to ask people. It's a short and simple one, but basically in the past you were in marketing and then you went to work at Google and you have your own, your blog, and you also worked at CU Boulder where, you helped entrepreneurs or, you know, students start their own business. I was wondering with all these experiences combined, what do you think you could go into in the future besides the course that you just mentioned?
Oh my God. To be honest, I don't even know where to begin because I think there's so many opportunities. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on what am I passionate about, right? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like our experiences are these little puzzles that when you put them together, that can propel you to one or another direction, and you can always find a way to, create different doors for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's that different experience that gives you an edge, right? So, what you were saying about your colleagues who have invested in their careers and trying to switch to something else. Oh my God, that the fact that you've invested into your career from, and you have that foundation gives you an edge. It is amazing. It gives you a different perspective on things. And this is why I think applying different skills that you have acquired throughout the years can lead you to so many different paths. And I can't even name, that's why I'm kind of stunned right now. I can't even, I don't know where to start. I think there's so many different opportunities, whether it comes to, I don't know, media and communications, right? Startups, big organizations, creating communities. I don't know. So many things. I can't name anything in particular. I feel like the world, as you always said, you can always create that path. So I can't name anything in particular. I don't see it as a this is a path to be a data scientist. This is a path to be a mechanical engineer. This is a path to be a marketing manager. I see it as a spectrum. Mm-hmm. I see it as, you know, you can apply different skills in so many different ways and you can create your own job. If it isn't there yet. So many different things. Sorry, I can't give you a specific answer. So many different things.
Yeah. Actually, this is a very common response that I generally get from people that I ask this question to, is that especially now that people have switched once or twice or even more times, they think that the possibilities are endless, and it's usually very hard for them to pick one. And I absolutely agree with the response. I think that it's absolutely true that your life and your career is what you make of it. And it all just depends on what you set your mind to, what you plan to do. And changes are not that difficult, but just taking the first step and realizing it is the most important thing, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Having that growth mindset, like you said.
Yeah.
And anything is possible.
So yeah, I think sometimes, well, I just want to say sometimes I think some people are, you know, like really focused on becoming a certain thing. So for example, like, you know, I've always wanted to become a doctor and then I became a doctor, but I kind of feel like, kind of at least throughout our conversation, I feel like you never really set like a particular role or job title or anything exactly specifically that you want to be. But I know for sure you have a defined vision for yourself. And, you know, obviously, you know what success means to you. So you're really just working towards that, you know, whether it's, you know, it means maybe working as the entrepreneur in residence for some university, or like working for yourself or working for some other company. Who knows in the future, you know, it doesn't really matter what that role is, as long as it's something that kind of, you know, like you said, it brings you closer to where you want to be and it brings you closer to what you define to be success. I think that's kind of all that matters. And I think doing it or like going about life that way kind of takes out a lot of pressure, right? Because you don't have to like, oh, I have to have that title of a director of, I don't know, marketing or something like that. And then you work really hard towards that, having that title next to your name. But defining success and, you know, like having a vision in mind of where you want to be, but not necessarily being, you know, constrained by a phrase or like a few words, is also very liberating. You know, it keeps you going and you know what's important to you and you're working towards that. So it doesn't matter like exactly what title is next to your name. Those are all like, I guess, icing or like, you know, like cherry on top of a sundae or something like that. But like, you don't necessarily need something that like defines you as a person like that.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know that some people might, it just, and that's the thing, like, the reason why I've created this course is understanding what is important to you. Do you need that title? Do you need this? Like, will this make you feel happy and secure? Will, you know, my mode of life will make you happy and secure and whatever. Defining it for yourself and admitting it to yourself, having that vision and that clarity helps you and liberates you, because then you understand, I need to have this title, or I don't need to have this title. And it's all about being honest and self-aware at the end of the day. So yeah, it absolutely, I completely agree with you.
I did want to ask Masha for your advice, actually, just your thoughts in general on having an online presence. I feel like most people I know don't really have an online presence, but you know, you're actually creating content that I feel like I feel good after I watch it. You know, it makes me feel like I'm learning something with, you know, I'm spending my time wisely by watching your content and reading about what you produce content wise. And so what are your thoughts and, you know, your advice for people that are trying to create an online presence for themselves? You know, how do they find their voice or their angle? Because, you know, maybe sometimes it's like my imposter syndrome kind of creeping in to make me feel like, oh, I'm not really an expert on anything. Who am I to say that, oh, you need to do this right now?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think that it all comes down to, why do you want to do it, mm-hmm. right? Why would you want to have an online presence? Why would you want to share content? What is the purpose behind it, right? Mm-hmm. And who would you want to serve? Because once you understand those two things, why and who, mm-hmm. you can start defining how you're going to go about it, because it doesn't have to be, you don't have to position yourself as an expert straight away, right? I started my blog learning how to code, and I was talking about me learning how to code. And I still tell my audience that I'm not a programmer. I've never, I do code. I have some personal projects, but I've never coded professionally for a company in exchange mm-hmm. for money, you know? Uh-huh. And being authentic and being very open with your experiences when it comes to learnings and things like that, it's part of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of building your brand online. So I would say, yes, why are you doing this? And who are you serving? And then defining the strategy after that. It should all trickle down from that, including which platforms should you be on, right? Because who is your audience? Where are they? Mm-hmm. What kind of content are they consuming and all that stuff? And also it gets to what are you going to share with the world? What mm-hmm. kinds of content is your potential audience interested in? And mm-hmm. does it serve your purpose? Does it serve your why? So all of those things really trickle down from those two questions. So I highly recommend to anyone who's thinking about starting their personal blog or their online presence to really think those things through. Mm-hmm. And then after that, everything else should follow.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you.
Lastly, before we end the conversation, if people are interested in finding more about you, where could they reach you?
Absolutely. They can find me at codingblonde.com or typing in codingblonde in most social media and they will find me.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Masha, for sharing your thoughts with us and your career journey.
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome. Bye. Bye.
That's it for this episode, and thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe for more interviews and check out our other social media for more content. We are on Medium, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find all the links in our profile. Leave us a message, tell us what you think and what you want to hear more of. Once again, thank you for listening, and I hope this inspires you to be the change you wish to be and pave the way for more fulfilling careers. Good luck.